5 years ago, the U.S. brought leaders from Israel, Morocco, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain together to sign the Abraham Accords. I'm Megan Alexander, and this is Middle East Tomorrow. Go to partners.foxnews.com/met.
Welcome to Sunday Night. This is One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. So glad you're watching. Coming up on the show tonight, you're going to love it. Benny Johnson, all over the fraud in California. He is leading the way, and he's heading there right after this interview. We're going to have James Blair with us. He's got the script for the Trump term, too, to hold on to the House, to hold on to the Senate. Will it work? We'll discuss it with him and Senator Tom Cotton on the ripple effects of the operation in Venezuela and what it could mean for our security and the security for everyone in Central and South America. But first, the fastest, most impactful monologue in America. Jaw-dropping. Widespread taxpayer fraud has been exposed. If you thought what was happening in Minnesota was bad, just wait. You got new allegations emerging this week. Look at all the yellow there in states across the country. Allegations of fraud now in more than a dozen states and likely to grow. The Department of Health and Human Services freezing $10 billion in funds for federal child care and family assistance program in five of those states already. And citing concerns over fraud and wasted taxpayer dollars, the Trump administration not taking any chances. The administration taking action, appointing a new attorney general, focuses specifically on fraud nationwide, and hopefully a quick confirmation from Senator Thune and company over in the Senate. There's a common theme here running through all of this. A significant portion appears centered around the Somali community. All this is Minnesota's Somali fraud scandal hit a fever pitch with demands for Governor Gwaltz and that horrible mayor, Mayor Fry, to resign. Why he got reelected, I don't know. And a heated hearing on the Hill as the House Oversight Committee digs into the massive scandal, trying to get some answers in real time with people under oath. Not politics, facts. We want to find out where the social services and Medicaid programs, where all that money went.
Does large-scale Somali immigration make Minnesota stronger or weaker?
Certainly stronger.
Certainly stronger. Do you know what percentage of Somali-headed households in Minnesota are on food stamps?
No.
54%. Do you know what that number is for native Minnesota-headed households?
Well, to be clear, a majority of the...
It's 7%. There's a big difference between 54% and 7%, is there not?
Do you have any doubt that Governor Tim Walz knew about this fraud as it was occurring?
He absolutely knew that it was occurring.
Now you know why Tim Walz is talking so much about ICE. Defendants accusing of siphoning as much as $9 billion in taxpayer funds through bogus billing and bogus sham providers. 98 people charged so far, 85 of Somali descent, 64 already been convicted. Money meant for children, disabled adults, instead spent on luxury homes, on vacations, expensive cars and jewelry. They all should be giving it back and they should go to jail. But Minnesota may turn out to be just the tip of the iceberg. One Homeland Security agent finishing their investigation there says they plan to head out to California. Governor Newsom openly challenging the probe.
Bring it on. Fraud in terms of child care? You think for a second anyone countenances fraud? So if he has some unique insight and information, I look forward to partnering with him. Can't stand fraud. Can't stand waste and
really?
Abuse.
He wants to be a partner. Isn't that interesting? A Republican-backed analysis of whistleblower tips claims to expose as much as $250 billion in taxpayer fraud. You got a state auditor finding $70 billion lost. Listen to this. $24 billion spent on non-existent homeless programs, non-existent high-speed rail, never built, now canceled. $18 billion. They lost $2.5 billion to SNAP fraud. And more billions spent on rebuilding after the Palisades fires. Almost no homes are built. Minnesota, with more than $9 billion diverted from its intended purposes and some of its alleged sent overseas, may be just the beginning. By the way, some of that money could have went to terror organizations. The mother lode, though, may be in California. And if that is true, much of the credit will belong to my next guest, Benny Johnson, host of The Benny Show. Benny, great to see you. When did you realize that California was worse than Minnesota?
Yes. So California is the fraud capital of the world. And here's how you know. Let's go ahead and look at just one program in California that the state budget, which is enormous, is supposed to solve. The homelessness crisis. Now, you can travel to any city in California and you will find tent cities, broken down RVs, people living on the street, people defecating on the street, people behaving in dangerous ways towards children and towards families and towards the taxpaying citizens of California. You shouldn't allow that in America. California knows that this is a problem. Gavin Newsom knows this is a problem. And they spent $24 billion on homelessness in California over the last few years. Brian, that's $160,000 per homeless person spent by the state of California. Now, where I'm from, in Iowa, $160,000 will buy you a home. You could just buy a home for every homeless person. This is what California has done. Now, what happened in the course of spending that enormous amount? Has homelessness gotten better or worse in California? In fact, homelessness, the rate of homelessness, has grown by 30,000 people. It's skyrocketed. Travel any street, go anywhere, but I would advise you, Brian, to go ahead and look right here at the map of Gavin Newsom's city. This is San Francisco's public defecation map. This is what one of America's once greatest and most beautiful cities, one of the most prosperous and richest cities, has been turned into. This is the public defecation map of homeless people inside of downtown San Francisco. Nancy Pelosi's house is on that map. Gavin Newsom's office is on that map. And Gavin Newsom oversaw that city, so he knows damn well that this money is being wasted and wasted egregiously and criminally.
And we put this full screen up so people can see it. And we went over it so you could take that in if you're watching at home. But I want to move on. I know you're getting to the bottom of this because it angers him. And it angers his staff. They are furious with you, and you're going there to confront this.
Yes, they're furious because it's indefensible what they've done in the Palisades as well. And the most important thing to do there is, just like what was done by Nick Shirley in Minneapolis, is simply go and turn on the camera. It's self-evident. Have there been any homes built?
No.
Gavin Newsom promised to rebuild the homes. Gavin Newsom promised that these people who lost 7,000 homes approximately in the Palisades, had their lives destroyed, had their family memories torched to ashes. Most people in America know somebody who's been affected by these fires, that he would cut the red tape, that he would cut the penalties, cut the fees, and that they'd get to rebuilding. Has there been a single shovel overturned in the Palisades? And again, you could just go there and turn on the cameras. If you turn on the cameras and knock on a Somali daycare and ask, can I enroll my child, you'll be met with screaming and someone calling the cops and a door slammed in your face. If you go to California and turn on the cameras and just film the streets of downtown L.A. or San Francisco or any city, you will see the egregious homeless problem. They've spent $24 billion, no homes have been built, and no homeless people have been saved.
So, Benny, we know this, too. On a policy, he was just insane. He was saying to everybody here, there illegally, you get free health care. He single-handedly destroyed the state health care system. He's backed off of that since. But yet people, he gave a State of the State address as if he was a returning war hero. Why don't people hold him accountable? He was a terrible mayor. In terms of results, he's been a terrible governor. How does he get a pass on this? He won't actually, no one even holds him accountable in the Pacific Palisades situation, yet no one's got permits.
Yeah, that's completely correct. It's because, Brian, I believe that many of the elections in California are also fraudulent. There are so many loopholes in the system, but here's the big one. They don't allow voter ID. They're being sued right now by the Trump administration because they refuse to turn over their voter rolls. How many criminal aliens are voting? The tune of $31 billion went to criminal aliens in the form of welfare or other services by California. And so how many of these people are actually electing the individuals like Gavin Newsom in a massive payout? It's going to be like the Somali fraud in Minneapolis when you actually look into it and investigate. And again, it is simply self-evident, just like if you turned on a camera. Cameras are, of course, Gavin Newsom's major enemy. When Gavin Newsom was locking down the entire state during COVID, he was at the French Laundry dining with all of his friends.
So, Benny, if he really wanted to get to the bottom of fraud, he should welcome Benny Johnson landing at LAX and grabbing there his phone and his camera and exposing it for him, because he doesn't like fraud, but he doesn't really mean a word in which he said. I hope you would come back and share with our audience what you find.
Yes, that's okay. A promise.
Benny Johnson, thanks so much, and we'll be checking out your podcast like most of America does. Thanks so much, Ben.
Thank you, Brian. God bless you.
Nearly home. Isn't home where we all want to be? Reba here for Realtor.com, the pros' number one most trusted app. Finding a home is like dating. You're not just looking for a place to live. You're searching for the one. That's where Realtor.com comes in. Like any good matchmaker, they know exactly where to look. With over 500,000 new real listings straight from the pros every month, you could find your perfect match today. Ranch style with a pool, barn dominium with an in-law suite, Realtor.com's got them. Modern craftsman with a big yard and a treehouse out back, Realtor.com will have you saying, yep, that's the one. No more swiping. It's time to start finding. Download the Realtor.com app today, because you're nearly home. Make it real with Realtor.com.
Pros number one most trusted app based on August 2024 proprietary survey. Over 500,000 new listings every month based on average new for sale and rental listings. February 2024 through January 2025.
People of Maine are angry. They are very upset that this fraud has been allowed to go on, and they are outraged. And to them, it is just as clear that it is to us that someone who has served on an organization that has committed that kind of fraud, that the Maine people deserve better sitting on the Appropriations Committee.
The continued saga of taxpayers getting ripped off now spreading to Maine. Our next guest is raising red flags on a potential similar pattern of fraud seen in Minnesota, but with Maine's Medicaid program the focus. Joining us is whistleblower Christopher Bernardini. He's the former billing guru for Gateway. And Gateway is a Somali-run business that he was there trying to help out, but found out things were not going wrong. Chris, thanks so much for coming forward. Tell me what Gateway is, what you did, and what went wrong.
All right. Yeah, so Gateway is a Somalian-run service that provides in-home supports, case management services, all kinds of things like that, home health services for not only migrants, but the community at large in Maine. They had offices in Portland, Augusta, and Lewiston, so they were trying to spread out throughout the whole state of Maine. This agency didn't operate exclusively for migrants, like I said. It started out that way. Their bread and butter was case management services where, you know, new Mainers, they help new Mainers settle into the state.
Yep.
That are coming, asylum seekers, stuff like that. And so they would bring them on, they would get them home health services. And we also hired the migrant community to work with the people in their community. So it was kind of like they would just bring them into the fold through case management. They'd get them counseling. The case management would help them, you know, set them up for, get them main care, get them EBT, get them these home health services. If they had children, they could get Section 28, which provided, you know, autism services for children.
So it's an admirable program. Community service for a program.
It seemed that way.
Right. So
yes,
it turns out Gateway got $28.9 million in payments from 2019 to 2024.
Yes.
And then they got $4.1 million last year. Where'd that money go?
Man, it could have gone anywhere, honestly. So my main job was I was doing all the billing. So it was my name. I was processing the actual claims that go from, you know, the staff in the field to the clients. I'm getting the time cards. I'm processing the time cards in the system. And the government knew about the potential for fraud in these home health programs because around 2020, they implemented the electronic visit verification system. Now, that forced the staff that were providing these services to use a app on their phone to check in when they got to the client's homes.
Right.
Now, there was a piece of this that allowed the supervisors on the back end, there was a website where we could track the staff's movements. You know, we could see what they were doing when they clocked in, clocked out, things of that nature. Those had to be verified before we could bill anything out to the state. If it didn't have an electronic visit verification, it couldn't be billed. So what I started seeing a lot in the migrant community in particular is they all had a hard time using this app, is okay. what I was always told. There was a language barrier or whatever. They couldn't.
We just got to pick up the pace a little.
Other staff were using it.
So you said, okay, it wasn't a language barrier. You realized it wasn't, or a technological problem. When did you realize things were going off track?
I saw it a lot, pretty much the whole time. As soon as EVV rolled out, we started seeing staff just weren't using it. And what would happen was the supervisors would create the logs on the back end. And I raised a stink about it then and said, you know, this isn't how this is supposed to operate. They have to be using this legitimately. We just can't create the logs on the back end.
And what did they say to you?
Every time. And they just kept giving me the same old spiel about it being a language barrier. But, like, we had other staff that were using it just fine.
Do you think
so I couldn't understand why it was only that community.
Do you think some of the money not only was not spent in the right places but left the country?
I definitely believe so. We had Abdullahi was gallivanting all over the country. You know, he would go to Kenya. We'd always see him going here and there. You know, he'd stop in the office a couple of times. I'd see him on some meetings and stuff, Zoom calls from Kenya, stuff like that. He was in Dubai a couple times. He was always dressed super nice, always had, you know, snake skin shoes and gator shoes, all kinds of Gucci, stuff
Chris,
like that.
So how much money do you think was wasted?
Possibly millions, because that went on for years with the EVV stuff, and I couldn't verify those claims. You know, there was no way. So the systems are there to make sure the fraud doesn't happen, but the people running the systems can still defraud them because they have control of the systems on the back end.
So
there's no way to really know what is and isn't fraud until you go through it and really see which ones were created on the back end versus in the field.
And the CEO of Gateway said he sent some money to militia groups in Somalia. So this is very similar because Maine doesn't have as populated as Minnesota. Again, it's around the Somali community. There's nothing biased or racist. That's facts. Thanks so much for telling your story.
Exactly.
I know it cost you your job. Chris, thanks so much. And hopefully you'll be called in front of Congress. Next, the ripple effect of the Venezuelan operation already playing out. Senator Tom Cotton joins us. And the midterms just around the corner. James Blair is here with the Trump game plan for holding the House and Senate. And quick note, be sure to see me on stage. Believe it or not, it's coming up Valentine's Day, Fort Myers, Florida, BrianKilmeade.com, streamed on Fox Nation, and then Reno, Nevada, May 30th, VIP opportunities available. Don't move. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian. So just about a week ago, in the middle of the night, the Venezuelan leader was plucked right out of his country and dropped off in a Brooklyn prison. What has happened since has been nothing short of astounding, because the ripple effects are putting other countries like Mexico, Cuba, Colombia, Brazil, and even Greenland in our hemisphere on notice. And the cooperation we're seeing, dare I say, is encouraging. Joining me now for the latest on all of this is Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee. Senator, I just have a map here, and talking about what has happened since Maduro was taken from here, Brazil's reaction. Mexico, who's now got to be put on notice with their cartels, and Colombia's president, belligerent one minute, conciliatory the next. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Brian, it's funny how that works, isn't it? First off, just let me commend our incredibly skilled and brave troops and intelligence officers who pulled off this operation. President Trump for authorizing the bold and audacious mission to bring Nicolas Maduro to justice. Venezuela was really unique in Latin America. It didn't just have drug cartels in the country. The government was a drug cartel. And it had become a crossroads and a playground for every American enemy in the world. Cuba, Russia, China, Iran, even Islamic terrorists like Hezbollah. So America is much safer today with Nicolas Maduro out of power. And as you just showed on that map, many countries have begun to sing a different tune, or now if they're anti-American or at risk themselves, like Cuba itself depends entirely on Venezuela for a financial lifeline. So we are much safer in our backyard with Nicolas Maduro behind bars in New York City.
And I think the way we did it and what has happened since is sending the right message. We got strength. We got skill. We have the incredible technology working with Space Command and CyberWorks. People say, am I next? So that's why Colombia picks up the phone. And then in Brazil, we told that leader, Lula, you cannot put Bolsonaro in jail and wrongly accuse him of fixing an election. He says, I'm doing it anyway. We hit him with tariffs. Suddenly, the sentence is reduced from 27 years to 2 years. Don't you think these two things are related?
Yeah, Brian, there's nothing like strength and resolution in international affairs. I think you can also cite the president's decision to bomb Iran's nuclear program last summer as well. Our friends throughout the Western Hemisphere, and for that matter around the world, are reassured that we have a president that will employ our amazing military and intelligence agencies when it's in our vital national security interest. And our enemies are worried that once again we have a strong leader in the White House in Donald Trump, not the weakness we saw with Joe Biden, most notably in the humiliating collapse in Afghanistan 5 years ago.
So let's go up to Greenland. I can't believe I never talk about Greenland until the last year and a half. But this is like our third major chance in our country's history to go get Greenland. I think the first time was right after the Civil War. Got Alaska. We tried for it. Then there wasn't a sentiment to get more land. And after World War II, we basically had to defend it. And I guess in 1951, we had the right to expand our military base there. But that's not good enough. The president is sending the Secretary of State to meet with Danish officials. What should happen, Senator?
Well, Brian, when the president first floated this idea 7 years ago in 2019, I wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, which did not cause the editor to be fired, which explained why it's in America and Greenland's interest for America to have sovereignty over Greenland. Much like it's a blessing that we bought Alaska over 150 years ago, something at the time that was called Seward's Folly after the Secretary of State. But who believes it's a folly today that we control the territory of modern Alaska? Greenland is a vital strategic location. It's important for missile defenses and early warning radars. As you said, in World War II, Greenland and Iceland were contested by the navies of both sides. It's rich in resources that are currently underserved or not being fully exploited. And of course, we have the ability with our vast national treasure and population to support the people in Greenland and bring them more economic development than our friends in Denmark could. And as you cite, we have a 1951 treaty that gives us more or less open access to Greenland for military purposes. And I think Secretary Rubio is going to be meeting with his counterparts from Denmark to talk about that treaty and about the prospect of, again, buying sovereignty over Greenland from Denmark. This is something that's been happened numerous times down our history, even with Denmark. What we today call the U.S. Virgin Islands used to be Danish territory. Woodrow Wilson bought them over 100 years ago. And thankfully he did, because it's always better if we can control territory that has vital access into our hemisphere.
And with all the success and how it looks to, it could be economic and security, that's why the president wants to put another $600 billion into the defense budget. And I hope they find a way to get it to him. Senator Tom Cotton, I know you're a confidant of the White House. They count on you for insight, and they count on you on this operation again. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Brian.
You got to win the midterms. because if we don't win the midterms, it's just going to be, I mean, they'll find a reason to impeach me. I'll get impeached. We don't impeach them. You know why? Because they're meaner than we are. We should have impeached Joe Biden for 100 different things.
Yep, that's what the president said. He's doubling down on the importance of keeping control of the House and keeping control of the Senate this November. Trump urging lawmakers this week to focus on key electoral priorities. Number one, affordability, brought up drug prices, and he brought up crime. Joining me now to discuss it is a man who knows a thing or two about this. The White House's playbook in the midterms might be written by him. He is James Blair. He is the deputy chief of staff. James, great to see you. When the president speaks to the caucus this week, he is actually, that's the pregame to the big game. And the big game started this week. What is in your playbook to lead Republicans to buck history and hold the House and Senate?
Well, look, first, as the president said, the president thinks we need to keep getting things done and cast a vision for the American people and keep accomplishing for them. And if they do that, Republicans on Capitol Hill will be rewarded at the ballot box. That process started this past week. The president rolled out a significant housing policy to ban big institutional investors from buying more homes in this country. This is something a lot of people have been frustrated about, and there's been a great response to. The president mentioned that he'll be talking more about that at his speech in Davos, not in this upcoming week, but the following week, along with a number of other affordability measures. The president will also make news on health care soon. He's been talking about it for several weeks, talking about getting the money to the people so they can buy the health care that they want rather than continuing to send it to big insurance companies whose stock prices have gone up while people's rates have just gone up and they're not getting the care that they want. So there will be big news in housing, big news on health care, and a number of other things coming down the pike over the next few weeks. The president wants to have a very active year. And when voters come out in November, they will not only have a lot to vote for us, having, you know, done what the president said we would do back in 2024, but also why should Republicans be put back in power for the years of 27 and 28? What are we going to accomplish for the voters in those years? And the president is laying out that agenda.
So people, experts say, like you, is roughly 35 to 39 seats open in the House that are going to be hard contests. I know the Senate's not going to be a layup, but expected to hold. What number do you go on? How many seats are actually contenders?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple dozen House seats that just mathematically you would say are competitive. I think the reality is the way the maps exists now, it is most likely that there will be a narrow House majority on either side. I happen to think the Republicans will come back with a relatively narrow House majority. I think the days of 40 seat swings are kind of gone. That is just not the way the maps are configured. So I think in many ways this is a game of inches and a game of yards. But to that point, the way to score touchdowns is to keep getting first downs. And I think that's right. What the president and Republicans are in Congress are doing every day.
So on foreign policy, it's already been a historic presidency. What happened in Venezuela, the bombing of the nuclear program in Iran, taking out the Nigerian anti-Christian movement, the terror movement. Can't forget about that. That's just some of it. Now, a lot of people say that that's great, but the American people care about what you just mentioned, domestic politics. And this is a quote from Politico. The broader problem for the White House is that the focus on foreign affairs, once again, crowding out the messaging on affordability with the chief of staff, Susie Wiles, worries that will make it the central theme of the election year. Is that something you worry about?
Here's what I would say. I think the president and Republicans' policies are taking hold. We're seeing that right now. So just this past week, mortgages are falling into the fives for the first time. Now, when President Trump took office, they were in the sevens. Under Joe Biden, mortgages were at almost an 8% interest rate for the typical 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, right? Gas prices under Joe Biden got to over $5 on average at one point across the country. They are now in the area of $2.50 on average, and many states are less than $2 gasoline. So inflation has halted. There was just a great jobs report this past week. Inflation has halted. Prices are coming down. And there's obviously tax cuts that people are going to feel by April of this year from the last year that we passed last summer, all by Republicans. And Democrats voted against all of it every step of the way. So I think as all those things come together, people are going to continue to recognize, as the numbers show, that what President Trump and the Republicans are doing domestically and economically economically is working, and it is going to make them in more excited than they have been and to feel better about their 6 and 12 month outlook.
Real quick, the headline in Politico this weekend, Brilliant James, how James Blair took Washington by storm. He's running the White House, the midterm strategy. The outcome will shape Trump's final 2 years in office and Blair's reputation ahead of this potential 2028 Vance presidential campaign. It's a lot of pressure on your shoulders. Is that an accurate headline? Are you brilliant, James?
Well, the president has generously said nice things about me at time, which I appreciate. But what's most important is the president is brilliant, and I have the opportunity to work for an administration full of brilliant people that have put a lot aside to come work on behalf of the American people and make their lives better. And that's a really exciting opportunity. It's a great honor.
And your timeline shows what hard work and paying attention will do. You've gotten everyone's respect. James Blair, continued success. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it.
Next, the media moments that matter with Tommy Lahren, and they matter to her. Bring up the music.
Welcome to Fox News Live. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer in New York. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem is deploying more law enforcement to Minneapolis. She says hundreds more ICE agents will arrive in the city over the coming days. The latest surge comes after 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good was shot and killed by an ICE officer last week. That shooting ignited protests across the city and country over the weekend. Top federal officials, including President Trump, are defending that agent. They claim he was protecting himself from being run over. But state and local leaders are condemning the shooting as unjustified and preventable. Homeland Security says it's been carrying out the biggest immigration enforcement operation ever in Minnesota. More than 2,000 arrests have reportedly been made across the state since the immigration crackdown operation started last month. I'm Ashley Strohmeyer, and back to One Nation with Brian Kilmeade.
Today, too many patients aren't getting the care they need. That's why United Health Group is innovating how healthcare is delivered, offering creative solutions that focus on patient outcomes, preventing disease before it starts, making care easier to get and less expensive, reshaping care to help more people live healthier lives. Learn what United Health Group is doing to help people get the care they need at uhg.com/mission.
Media Moments That Matter.
Yes, time now for Media Moments That Matter, the one segment that all the country agrees is the best ever. This week I gave the VCR, my TV guide, all my cords and my tape stock to Big Weekend Show co-host Tommy Lahren. Tommy, I gave you all the equipment again. Were you able to come up? Thanks so much for doing this, by the way. Have you able to come up with any media moments that really matter?
A few moments that matter. All the moments really matter, of course. The media gives us so much every week, but I've narrowed it down to, I think, my top three. Okay. I don't want to spoil it for the audience. One of them includes you, sweet Brian Kilmeade.
Yes.
But we're going to get to that one last. Save the best for last. I want to start off with this one. All right. I don't know if you heard. I know we covered it. But there's a hammer-wielding psychopath that attacked the home of Vice President J.D. Vance. The family, thank goodness, was not home. Now, that would be important to cover, you'd think. But some of the mainstream media networks, they decided not so important. I think PBS, 30 seconds, NBC, 40 seconds, ABC, not at all, CBS, not at all. You see it right there. Apparently not important to cover an act of domestic terrorism on the vice president's home in Ohio. But they did have time to cover some other breaking news.
Oh, yeah?
I want you to hear what was more important.
Community leaders found 12 local volunteers to pose for a, yes, nude calendar. It's called Outback Naked. Yours for a $25 donation to the town. Now, don't worry. As you can see, thanks to some artfully placed power tools and flower pots and the like, the mostly middle-aged and elderly models are still safe for your television.
To the index, well, they call it Black Monday in the NFL for a reason. Four NFL head coaches already fired tonight.
Right. So the vice president attacked. His family could have been hit, but we can't really cover that. They covered the speaker's husband when he got hit by a hammer attack, right?
Rightfully so. But right. Outback Naked, more important, did you get your calendar yet to support that town?
CBS had a tough week. They also fired their executive producer on the show. Number two.
Okay, there are a few comedians left that still get it. I think Conan might be one of them, but he's blasting his cohorts in the field, saying that they're not really funny anymore and probably because of their TDS. Take a listen to this.
some comics go the route of, I'm going to just say F Trump all the time, or that's their comedy. And I think, well, now a little bit you're being co-opted because you're so angry. You've been lulled. It's like a siren leading you into the rocks. You've been lulled into just saying F Trump, F Trump, F Trump, screw this guy. You know, and I think you've now put down your best weapon, which is being funny, and you've exchanged it for anger.
Yeah, he's funny first. I don't think he would ever vote for Trump, so it doesn't matter, though. You watch his show, you didn't know that. You watch Carson, you never knew that. You watch Leno, you don't know who we voted for. But now you have Kimmel and Colbert. They're like shows that belong on MSNBC.
And they're not funny. If you're going to poke at Trump, at least be funny, because President Trump is so funny.
Right.
So President Trump, being the president, is more humorous and comedic than these three losers, I would argue.
Or go to the other side once in a while and just find the humor instead of the anger. Next, Jon Stewart.
Yes. I saved the best for last.
Why?
Now, Jon Stewart, arguably, maybe still funny, I don't know. But he saved a segment, a personal shout-out for you, sweet Brian Kilmeade. Take a look.
Who haven't received the memo that we no longer have to frame our adventurism in the ideals of our great country.
The president doesn't want his natural resources. We don't want their oil.
Oh, poor sweet Brian Kilmeade. Sweet, sweet Brian. Trump already explicitly said he wants their oil.
Listen, I think that's funny. And, of course, he says about it, he would use the oil as leverage because no one can really produce their oil back to where it was at 2 or 3 million barrels a day. They're at 300,000 now. But that's funny. I don't see any problem with
that. Were you flattered by it, Brian?
No. Flattered? No, actually, it's Gutfeldian as opposed to anger and what you get in the other channels. I do think Jon Stewart's funny.
But now it's sweet Brian Kilmeade.
Right.
As you will heretofore be referred.
Which that actually was what Matt calls me prior to that segment. Thank you very much. Tommy, great to, I can't wait to watch you all weekend. I loved watching you all weekend, I should say, but I like watching you every weekend. I know a lot of times you go home over the weekend.
I stay right here for 6 hours.
All right, it's time for the much ballyhooed sneak peek of the week. What you can look forward to this week is Secretary of State Marco Rubio, and he's National Security Advisor, set to meet with Danish officials about interest in Greenland. Tommy, if you bring your checkbook, I think we get it.
And I'm going to be the princess of Greenland, Brian.
I think it'll be great. I don't have much responsibility, only 85,000 people there. Two hearings to watch out for. One to examine ways to detect and prevent federal fraud. We could have had this 8 years ago. The other to Joe Biden's Afghan parolee program. A disaster, you agree?
We're leering a lot about it all, Brian.
The White House will present Trump's ballroom project for review to the National Capital Planning Commission. Here's the secret. He's already building it. And plus, in the NFL, divisional round of the playoffs. Please don't air him during our show. Next, the Trump administration looking to put money back in your pockets. Congressman Jason Smith is next. Don't forget to follow me on social media, Rumble, Instagram, X, and Facebook. And if you want to get intimate, Culper Club on Locals. More One Nation in just a moment. Tommy Lahren, thank you so much. So President Trump working overtime to make America affordable again. The administration making key moves to put money back in your pocket, rolling out a tax incentive on car loans for cars made in America, banning Wall Street investing firms from buying single-family homes, about time, and an executive order expected next week that will allow people to dip into their retirement, 401ks, like, for example, or 529s or your college savings plans if it helps you get a down payment for a house. Here to explain how all this works and affects you is the man with the checkbook. He's the chairman of the House and Wayne's Committee, Congressman Jason Smith of Missouri. Chairman, great to see you. First off, I'll go one by one. The president's looking to have a big year with the economy. We know about the big, beautiful bill. First off, what do you think the impact is with the car loans, being able to write that off?
Well, just the passage of the big, beautiful bill being early in the year in July is really, really putting jet fuel to the economy. You're seeing that with the GDP hitting record levels, 4.3% this last time. But when it comes to various tax provisions within the one big, beautiful bill, one that will help working families and also help increase manufacturing in the United States is where people can deduct auto loan interest for cars that are manufactured in the United States. And they can do that above the line in their taxes.
That'll be interesting. How do you feel? And, you know, this has been executive orders. It's got to go through your committee, and they want your input. But being able to tap into your 529s, college loans, or for your 401ks or your retirement, your pensions, in order to get put money down in a house. How do you feel about that?
Well, if you just look at when President Trump left office, the average age for a first-time home buyer was 32 years old. And right now, it is 40. So basically, young people have been priced out of the opportunity to purchase a first-time home. And the president's lead and his leadership in doing everything he can to help make the American dream become a reality, we should champion that, whether it's looking at the 529s or even the mortgage buybacks. The
president also wants $1.5 trillion for the defense budget, an extra $600 billion. Can you find it for him?
You know, that's going to be very difficult because we have a very narrow majority. We have 218 Republicans in the House, and there's 218 votes to have the majority. And a lot of my colleagues want to balance the budget. They want to reduce spending. And adding additional spending of that magnitude is going to be very, very difficult.
Even though we found $200 billion in tariff money, what about this? And this is a little over my head. He wants to take about $200 billion from Fannie and Freddie, which he spun on his own, and buy bonds with it. From Fannie and Freddie. How do you feel about that? How would that work? How would people feel it?
You know, I think that's a great approach. It will help drive down mortgage interest rates, which will be very, very helpful and create more of an opportunity for people to be a homeowner. And that's what ultimately we want, is more people to be homeowners. And that's what the president's doing. We also need to get those interest rates down. And you've seen that the Fed has, over the last two announcements, lowered interest rates, but they need to continue to do so more.
You pointed out, too, prior to the interview with CBO, how wrong they've been. But first, they have you had growing at 2%, it's 4%, then 1.9, you grew more, doubled that. And now the Atlanta Fed thinks we can grow as much as 5.2%.
That's exactly right, Brian. The economy is on jet fuel, and the Congressional Budget Office, their scorekeepers have been so wrong. They said that the second quarter would be 2%. In fact, it was 3.8%. They said the third quarter would be 1.9%. It was 4.3%. And now with the Atlantic Fed predicting 5.4%, the economy is on jet fuel, and it's because of the work of the president and also the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill.
January 22nd, you're going to have a hearing. It's going to be really important. Hopefully, we'll cover it. You're going to grill insurance companies, CEOs, on making health care affordable. You know they're getting the money and all those subsidies that Joe Biden gave them. And all we know is costs are going up and deductibles are going up. And now they want more of that money. What are you going to ask?
You know, Republicans are focused on lowering the price of health care and premiums for every single American. That's all 347 million Americans. And I have not found, Brian, one person that says that they're happy with their health insurance provider. And so it's important to have these health insurance companies before the committee so that they can justify why these premiums have been continuing to rise.
Jason Smith, thanks so much. And ladies
Thanks,
and gentlemen, that is it for Jason, and that's it for us tonight. I want you to listen to my radio show, especially this week. I'll be live in Germany at a premier American Army base. One of my guests, one of the best in the business, four-star general Chris Donahue. And we're going to have Fox and Friends. I'll be able to give some updates from there and come back with some great features. So as I leave, I'll say this. Stay within yourself and always keep it right here on Fox News.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.